Okay. So I apologize for missing the previous weeks. Where we left off was a discussion of what I consider a necessary background for dealing with the specific cases that we will be, in Yitz Hashem, dealing with over the next few weeks. And basically, just to make this really hit home and real life experience, we could focus on five halachic issues that I encountered, let's say, over the past 2 years. Real life issues. Issue number one. Very, very common. Anyone who's been through a pregnancy will know that there are many tests that the obstetrician gets to assess how things are going with the baby, how things are going with the mother. One of them, I consider notorious, the alpha fetoprotein, AFP. The purpose of this test is really twofold. It serves as a marker for the possibility of Down syndrome, or for an increased risk of Down syndrome. That's if the levels are low. And on the other hand, if the levels are too high, it's a marker for a possible something called a neural tube defect. Another very serious abnormality. What's important is that, number one, it's relatively inaccurate. That's for everybody to know for their own life experiences. Our first three children drove us nuts before I knew what was going on. Normal kids. After that, our latter four children, no alpha fetoprotein. I refused ever to look at that test again. That's just between me and you and the tape recorders, a little advice on putting perspective in case you are ever faced with that scenario. I, as a pediatric cardiologist, face it all the time because I get many patients who are told by their obstetricians that if you have an abnormal AFP, an abnormal alpha fetoprotein that suggests increased risk for Down syndrome, what you should realize is get an amniocentesis, because you can make the definitive diagnosis that way, and then we'll take care of things. So obviously what the obstetrician's thinking, taking care of things, is abortion, or maybe, depending on the obstetrician, preparation. But for the most part, the shaila becomes, A, are you allowed to do an amniocentesis to find out whether the mother is carrying a Down syndrome child? Why is it a shaila? Because amniocentesis is not without risk. And when you do that test, even bismaneno, even currently, there is a certain percentage risk of losing the baby. What's the tachlis? What are you going to gain by finding it out? So, well, for some, the tachlis theoretically is, if it is something like Down syndrome, then they would abort. Is that mutter? Is it mutter to abort a fetus because you know it's a Down syndrome? That's a major machlokes. You would have thought pshita one way, maybe. Maybe you know already that it's not pshita. But I have this type of situation present itself to me because many parents are told, if you add up the risk factors in other non-invasive ways, you can get similar information. So I will look at the fetal heart, which gives more markers for the possibility of Down syndrome. That's why they're coming to me. And the shaila, what struck me recently is that several families that came to me came with a report that their rav told them that there's tachlis in getting the test done, even the amnio, because it's a possibility that abortion could be considered. Right? So why was that such a chiddush to me is that there seems to be a shift in the psak over this issue. We'll talk about that more. It's more of an acceptance. This is my own anecdotal observation. This is not fact.
Is it a big posek or a smaller level posek?
Well,
you don't have to say the name.
See, you know, the way these things work, you should know, is most people will go to their small posek, as you put it, right? Their home shore rav, right? That's the starting point, usually, for these issues. Some rabbanim right? Many shift it right up. Too much for me. I'll handle Hilchos Shabbos, Hilchos Kashrus. Hilchos abortion, they'll send right up the line, you know, to the whoever. Many Rabbanim, however, don't do that. They feel already that this type of Shashin is in many, certain Rabbanim, who are middle. We'll call them middle Rabbanim. And they, of course, do not do this without consultation, I believe. And I definitely don't want to get into any names, but I was struck that somebody who I never would have thought would give such a notion, and I'm only mentioning it to sort of emphasize the chashivas of what we're going to do today. Because today, ultimately, what I'd like to do is contrast the two extreme shittas over this issue. We're going to see within these makaros that you all have how we come out with a psach. On the one hand, just to get to the bottom line ahead of time, but Moshe Feinstein will consider abortion absolutely begeder etzicha, mamish etzicha, asim daraisa, obviously, but now asim daraisa, etzicha. And therefore he would say, you cannot tell me that because it's a Down syndrome child, you can abort, doesn't matter if etzicha is etzicha, and absolutely also to do the amniocentesis. There's no tachlis in it whatsoever. Can't take that risk of the amniocentesis for any theoretical knowledge you're going to get because you're not going to be able to act upon it. At the other extreme is the Tzitz Eliezer, who is very mako on this issue, and he says it's asa midrabanan. Abortion is asa midrabanan, not even an issa deraisa. This is quite an extreme difference in psak, right? And I thought it would be most illuminating for us to discover as we go through these makaras how they could both, these gedolim, come out so differently. That's going to be what we're going to do for the main part today. But I want to focus on five cases. I only mentioned one. So that's the first case. Understanding abortion, Megabe, Down syndrome, Megabe, amniocentesis. That's case number one. Case number two that I...
In terms of amniocentesis, I've heard different things, sort of a medical question. Is there advantage, even if you're not going to abort the fetus, of just knowing what the situation is?
Right, so it's a very individualized question, right? And one family absolutely convinced me. I was actually trying to talk them out of doing it. Why? Because they were holding, like, let's say, closer to the Rav Moshe Shita. They were not going to do an abortion. And I said, so why are you going to take a, you know, you can abort this baby. Don't do it. And they needed to know.
My question is emotionally, even medically, will a doctor to know?
No. In my opinion, there's no advantage. In terms of, well, I shouldn't say it so blanketly, but in terms of, let's say, Down syndrome, in my opinion, no. I mean, if you're suspicious of it, which you will be anyway, there's nothing you could do about it ahead of time. And knowing the vada, as opposed to being suspicious, no difference. Absolutely no difference. The fear needs not to the medicine. And I've seen it 100 times. So going on that, never makes a difference. It's only emotional. It's an emotional question. It's preparing the family. It's preparing the parents. Preparing the grandparents. Siblings, all that type of stuff cannot be minimized. In some cases, it's very significant. Like this family I was just about to tell you about, they convinced me for their family it was the right thing. And although you could argue it's still a sakana to the fetus, but they wanted to do it and supported them.
Oh, I was in the Old City for Shabbat. I happened to notice it was unbelievably 4 or 5 religious families in the Old City had Down syndrome babies, children. And I was wondering, is there some Ashkenazic reason for
propensity?
This, or is there something wrong
with interesting. It is the fact that Ashkenazim, or not Ashkenazim, Jews from Jews, continue to have babies past the age of 35 when your risk begins to go up. If you're having kids when you're older, that's the way I would understand that phenomenon. There is no genetic link to Ashkenazim and Down syndrome, even though there's two ways to be at risk of Down syndrome. Sure. One is this age thing. That happens to anybody. Once you're over 35, the woman is an increase, and it keeps going up. I'd say, let's say, at the data I remember offhand, above 35, the risk becomes 1 in 100. Above 40, the risk becomes 2 in 100 of having a Down syndrome child.
So it depends if it's your first child,
that's what it is.
Right?
What?
It also depends if it's your first child after 35. If
I
understand it, after 35, it's your first child, the risk becomes like almost 10-20% if it's your first child.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that data.
So 2 years ago.
Okay, could be. I'm not familiar with that. There's another way to have Down syndrome, baby, even if you're under 35 and you don't have that risk. So there's a translocation. It means what happened was, you know, it's the 21st chromosome, and it didn't divide properly, and some people carry this possibility. That I don't think, and that's really the answer to the question, I don't think that's linked to Jews or Ashkenazi Jews any more than it is to anybody. It's out there.
It's not one of those things, though, like Tay-Sachs, where you can test between two people and say, oh, we have a propensity.
No, but you could, all you need is one to have this, and you can test it. I know a family that has it, and we're going to get to, actually, that brings us to the second case.
Is there a limit in family if you marry close relatives? Is that just a myth?
That close relatives increase the chance for a lot of things, not necessarily Down syndrome. No, not necessarily Down syndrome. But many other things, because of consanguinity, can cause unusual genes to present themselves that normally wouldn't. Because it's one part of the family, but if it's siblings or cousins even, like it becomes more of an issue. So what's the second case that really is very much related? And that is, and Rahmanu, it's not such a horrible situation. And I dealt with this year. A family, they know that they are carrying some horrible genetic defect. So that, so far, they have two children, and two out of the two, final son had this horrible defect. It's as bad as Tay-Sachs. It's just suffering, ending in death. This is a horrible thing. So what are they going to do? They want to have children. So they can adopt, right? But they want to have their own children. So they talk to a geneticist, and the geneticist tells them, it is not mukhrach that every child will have this condition, right? We're not going to get into the science of it in genetics. Take my word for it, the majority of defects are like this. It's not mukhrach. It's likely. It's a big chance you're taking every time you have a kid, but it's not guaranteed. Are there any ways to work the odds in your favor? Anyone know?
Right.
We talked about it once. Right. In vitro, right? What does that mean? You take multiple eggs from the mother, you fertilize them from the father, everything is on the up and up in terms of no questions among Zeres and all those other issues, and you have many, many fertilized zygotes, that's what this is at this stage they're called, and you select, you look at the chromosomes and you say, this one's got it, this one doesn't have it, take the good one. What do you do with the bad ones? Get rid of them. Are you allowed to do that? Can you do that, al pi halacha? Because that's a very viable solution to what, before the technology that lets you do this, was an absolute horrible situation. And we were, Rabbanim would say, you know, tamin tiyeh mashal okecha, that's all you could do, just like, you know, you just take it, whatever happens, happens. But now, here's a viable solution to avoid that whole thing. Is it mutter? So we're going to answer that question, so at least we'll understand the poskim's approach to that problem. The next problem is a little different. We also want to answer the following. I've encountered this many times. There are certain defects, it's a congenital heart defects, that if the child is born with it, there's over a 90% chance that he won't make it. We could try at birth to do something, but greater than 90%, they won't survive. Or they'll be lost in utero. However, there's an experimental treatment that allows fetal intervention. It allows us to go into the uterus, into the fetus, fix it before it becomes unfixable. So I had a colleague who very much promoted this intervention. She was one of the originators of it. And Frum Kokel comes in, and they unfortunately had this diagnosis, and she is pushing it hard. And they're overwhelmed. They're overwhelmed by the whole thing. So they came to me. They just happened to see me in the hallway wearing a yarmulke, and I was working there. So they said, "Can we talk to you?" And they wanted a friendly opinion on this whole issue. Should we do this procedure or not? What's involved in the shayla? Why is it halachic shayla? They weren't asking me my halachic opinion. They were asking my medical opinion. But of course, it opens up. What's the halachic significance? Is A, can the mother take the risk for the sake of the fetus? That's question number one. Because there's a risk we're going to be doing surgery to the mother. Is she allowed to take a risk for the sake of saving the fetus? Number two, if this procedure does not work, instead of the 90% chance that the 10% chance that we'll have a viable baby at the end of the day, there now is there's no chayisha, there's nothing. Miyad, the baby, the fetus will be killed. So this is a risk shaylah, halacha of taking risks. The first one is, can the mother take a risk for the fetus? And then, just the fetus, from the perspective of the fetus, is the fetus allowed to take a risk to lose the chayisha that he's likely to have? And for the gamble of chayyom, very famous halachic issue, that it's kedai that we'll go through it, but that was question number two.
What's the risk? The mother is a serious risk? Or?
No, not that serious. There is a risk, though. You're going to need general anesthesia. That's always a risk. You never say do that for free. We're light with it. We're more and more, in this day and age, it's more and more considered, you know, almost batel daito to a kol adam to be worried about that, right? But it's not zero risk. It's not zero risk. And more than that, the risk of going in there has to be at least as much a risk as an amniocentesis, which Rav Moshe ushered, right, for no gain. So the question is there enough gain here, or potential gain, that it warrants the risk to the mother, even if it is small, under 5% or whatever it is? It's not so completely partial. And then there's the other issue that comes out of that question, experimental therapy. Is experimental therapy mutter to Jews? Are we allowed to try experimental therapy? Because this is an experimental therapy. So the ending of that story, we'll talk about the halachas, they decided not to do it. And I'm not telling you this to bias you, but and the baby did very well. Baruch Hashem, the baby's doing great now. Was born and was addressed at birth and was part of the 10% that made it. Similar question. A woman diagnosed, she's pregnant, she's diagnosed with cancer. And she is told, you need chemotherapy. However, the chemotherapy is going to kill your fetus, very likely. What does she want to do? Not take it. I want my baby to live. I'm going to take the chance of my life to save this baby. So it's very similar in terms of, can she risk it for the sake of the baby? The reason I want to throw this case in is because this is a case that the Tzitz Eliezer deals with directly. So it'll be very convenient to extrapolate out from how he handles that to see what we would do with our case of the fetal intervention. And the final case is embryonic stem cells for research. Scientists today, doctors today, want to get their hands on as many embryonic stem cells as possible. Remember what embryonic stem cells, those are the really good ones. Those are the ones that are totally undifferentiated. They're capable of being anything and everything, meaning they could be a full clone, a full new baby. Or, if you have the technology and the know-how, which that's what they're trying to gain, you can make these cells become what you need. You need the liver, you need the heart, you need the kidney. Forget about all the transplant issues. Just make your own for each person. So in order to get there, they need to work on these embryonic stem cells. Where's the source? So the two potential sources that they want to tap into are the extras from IVF treatments. So the shaila becomes, is it mutter to take an embryo created for the purpose of a fertility treatment that will now be discarded or kept indefinitely in some freezer? Can I use that for research? That's one level of the question. And then the further level is what they really want to do. Can we, lechatchila, create these embryos not to make a person, no fertility, just for the purpose of research? It's a very different child. But all of these questions start with what we're trying to get out of this, these makoros. So at the end of, let's say, if she carry us through like 2 or 3 weeks, we should have an answer to all those shilas, at least an understanding of where the poskim take them. And all of it is founded in what we're going to discuss today.
What's the amniocentesis?
What that involves is taking a needle, you go through the woman's abdomen, right? And you can do it other ways also. The key is you want to get into the amniotic fluid. That's the fluid that surrounds the fetus. And you get in with this needle, you take out enough fluid to get cells, right? The fetus is shedding all the time. Any cell from that fetus will give all the chromosomes. So if you can get that fluid with its cells, you take out the cells, you can look at the chromosomes and know all these issues about chromosome defects.
Why is it so dangerous?
It can cause a spontaneous abortion. Meaning you can make, because you're, disrupting the equilibrium of what's going on, just taking out some fluid causes an imbalance that could cause a abortion, and it does. It does in a certain percentage of time. The better you are at it, they're definitely, if anyone, Chas V'Shalom needs to do this, it is kedai to make sure you're getting somebody who's very good at it. Because there's a big spectrum in how good the obstetricians are at doing this. They each have their own rates of complications. But it's a real tangible rate of complications that exists, so it's not so pushy to just do it. All right. So we began to try to understand the status of the fetus. And we talked about, we started with Ubar Yerach Imo. That machlokes that you find in many, many, many Gemaras. And just to get to the bottom line, we discovered that really we paskin, for the most part, that an Ubar is Yerach Imo. An Ubar is considered just an appendage of the mother in legal terms. So that, as we saw in the Rambam, we can go as far as to say if the mother does an Avera, it's like the fetus is doing an Avera. So much so that when we saw by Kaparos, and this I didn't emphasize, but somebody had asked a question about the case of the Kaparos. Let me just review it in case you don't remember. The Ramah had said that for a Meuberes, right? Normally you take a Zachar for a Zachar and a Keva for a Nekeva for a Kaparos, and for a Meuberes we'll take two Tarnagolim. Ulai Teled Zachar. So the Magen Avraham says, okay, why are we only taking two? What if it's in a Keva? So the Magen Avraham says that what's going on here is that you can get away with two kaparas for one person, so they can both share one, and it's that type of issue. And the Gra said, no, what is he talking about? It has nothing to do with any Hilchos Kaparas. It's Ubar Yerach Imo. And the reason that you don't need a second one for the possibility of the Nekeva is that the Nekeva and the mother are one entity. So someone asked, well, wait a second, if it's really one entity, it shouldn't make a difference if it's a boy or a girl. A boy also should be one entity, and always you should need only one. Right, everyone remember that question and understand that question? So I saw Rav Sternbach in Mordim and Zmanim of all places, addresses this. He addresses this issue. He comes up with the answer, take it or leave it. I'll tell you the upshot of what he says. He said that clearly, Ubar Yerach Imo, like the Gross says. And in every sense, we consider this lad a part of the mother, so much so that he adds the following. Not only do we say that when the mother does the Avera, the Ubar is doing the Avera, but the Kapara also, when the mother gets the Kapara, the Ubar is getting the Kapara. Because he asks, why does this Ubar need Kapara? The Ubar is a Bar Onshin, needs Kapara, right? It's less than a Katan. It's because it's all part of the mother. It's really not a separate one. Ah, but what about a Zachar? Why does Zachar need its own separate Kapara? He says, because, and he tries to back this with a statement in the Rashba. If you want to see it, you have to look at it in its length. That everything Ubar Yerach Imo, except for the gender. The gender can't. There's nothing you could do about the fact that there's a Zachar here. Even though we're going to say that Ubar is Yerach Imo, the Kapara counts for the mother and the baby, but it couldn't quite make a boy into a girl.
Only else Kapara or anything else?
The riots he brings are from other areas of Allah. So it's fascinating. So it's Machlokes Rishonim. I don't want to get into it. I really don't want to get into it. You got to look at it. I'll tell you where it is. It's Siman Nun Beis, in Modim Izmanim. I don't remember which Chalek, but it's by Yom Kippur. Hilchos Yom Kippur. And he gets into this whole discussion of Machlokes the Rashba and other Rishonim as to exactly how this works out, but it got a little too metaphysical for me for the time I wanted to put into it. So anyway, that question is addressed. The bottom line is, what I wanted you to see from this Makor really is only one thing. The Gra paskins and goes through all those little sigyos and says, Ubar Yerach Imo. So we ask the question, does that mean that's the end of the Shaila? Ubar Yerach Imo. So there's no independent significance to a fetus. It's just a part of the mother. If that were true, then the abortion question would be very simple. What would be the possibilities? It would be either a mother has a right to do whatever she wants, the right to life, or the right to for a woman to decide, right? Or, like we would hold la halacha, you don't have a right to be chavah ba'atzma, right? And that's the whole issue. Abortion would be just a question of chavala of the mother to herself. And you would imagine that tzarech gadol, it's mutter. Like if it's for something else, not a sakana to the mother. But let's say she needs it for a certain refuah that's below the level of sakana. Even then, maybe it's mutter because all it's a question is being chavah ba'atzma. Like taking a shot, you know, or some type of immunization. Maybe it's just in that gedder. So is that what we're saying? Ubar Yerachimah to that degree? So we saw, no, not so fast.
If Ubar Yerachimah, why is Rav Moshe Feinstein to hold the Tzichah?
Yeah. That's why I want to get moving. I'm taking too much time on this.
Okay.
Good. So right away we saw the Tosfos in Sanhedrin, it's also Tosfos in Chulin, and the Psach of the Shach, and the Taz, and everyone else, that there's an exception to this Ubar Yerachimah that's Chuli Alma, right? And that's in the area of Chayus, Trefos. When it comes to a trefa, we don't say Ubar Yerachimo. Everybody says it's independent. There's an independent life entity here. That opens the door to start all over. That's our question.
What do you mean by trefa? What context do you mean?
Like, for example, the vlad of a trefa, it's mutter to eat. Whereas the trefa, you couldn't. If Ubar Yerachimo, then it should have been trefa. But we give it separate status. Because it was Torah and Chayus. Because why is that mother a trefa? She's a trefa because she's going to die within 12 months or she's not capable of having children. Right? But the vlad is not. That's not true about the vlad. The vlad's life is independent of the mother's life. Once we say that, so what is this vlad? That's what we want to understand. So we start with asking the question, is there a iser ritzicha by this vlad? If there is, then there's the answer, like Rav Moshe. So the Gemara in the Mishnah Nida seems to say there is no onish misa. Doesn't seem to say. It says there is no onish misa for killing a fetus. When does the onish misa begin? The first day of life. Or the first moments of life. Then, for killing that baby, there's an onish misa. But an ubar, no onish misa. That's l'chuli alma. No one argues with that, but Rav Moshe Feinstein totally agrees. However, does the fact that there's no onish misa mean that there's no iser ritzicha? Absolutely not. And we mentioned the example of a trefa and or lack of hasra, whatever it is that gets you off the onish. That doesn't mean you didn't do a maaser ritzicha. So Rav Moshe is going to maintain that there is a maaser ritzicha that's going on here with major ramifications that are going to be very limiting in what, according to Rav Moshe, you could do with a fetus. If you look on page 3 of the handout, we're going to look at the first sugya that Rav Moshe brings in to prove his point. It all starts with the following clause. Is there anybody that does have an onish misa for killing a fetus? Yes. Who? Anyone get to look at these makaras? Just curiosity. So I know how to do this. Yes. Ben Noach is chayav misa for killing a fetus. That's why the reflexive reaction we always have that when we're going to look for kulas and avenues to make things happen, oh, we'll have a guy do it, it's not going to be so pushy in the area of abortion. It's worse, right? For a guy to kill a fetus, certainly after 40 days, before 40 days it's going to be another shayla, but after 40 days, that's going to be onish misa for the guy. And then we saw that there's a klal. And this Rav Moshe really, really focuses on. It's not only Rav Moshe. I saw Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, actually. He wrote a nice essay, some governmental body asked him to do this, on abortion. And he was really focused on this idea also. That, is there something that is aser to a Ben Noach, aser to a non-Jew, that's mutter to a Jew? And if you hold that cloud to be true, right, as Rav Moshe certainly does, then it's impossible that we'll say, on the one hand, a guy is chayav misa for abortion, but it's mutter legamri for a Jew. It must be aser. And that's what we see on the bottom source in Sanhedrin, right, that the Tosfos concluded, and this is where we ended last time. Tosfos said, Val ha'ubarim, he's talking about this inyan of Leika midi del Yisrael Shari del Ovid Kachavim Aser. What about Ubarim? Ovid Kachavim Chayav Yisrael Pater. So he says, Afagav depatim, you know, yikol makom, lo shari. That's where we ended off. That it's not mutter. It isn't mutter. But what's the question? What's the issur? Clearly, and Rav Moshe is going to be moded to this as well, all you need is there to be some issur. It doesn't have to be an identical issur to the Ben Noach to meet the requirements of this klal. Doesn't mean, that's not going to be Rav Moshe's raya, that it's an issur ritzicha. It only is that it's asur. Right? And Rav Oldenburg will say, I'll even accept, he has two approaches to this Tosfos that says that it's certainly not shari to a Jew. He says, first of all, maybe Tosfos means what? Isser derabanan. Number two, there's another Tosfos, which you don't have in the handout. I don't know why I left it out. It's a very, very significant one. This is a Tosfos in Nida daf memdalid amud aleph end days. It flips over. And over there, Tosfos seems to say a remarkable thing. He uses the expression mutter by abortion. So the Tzitzel Ezer says, look, this Tosfos says asur. That Tosfos says mutter. So not such a strong rabbi. Nevertheless, Rav Moshe, in his opening point, and you can find his tshuva in Choshen Mishpat Chelek Beis, Samech Tes. He opens up his tshuva with the following point. He says, look carefully at Tosfos Dibra Masvel Leika that you have on the bottom of page 3. It says, Leika Midam de Yisrael Shari. So he says, what are the parameters, what are the limitations, Tosfos says, to this rule? B'davar shehu mitzvah Yisrael lo amrin anachi. That it's true that there's nothing that is usher to a non-Jew that's mutter to a Jew unless it's a mitzvah, right? If it's a mitzvah, it can be mutter to a Jew because it's a mitzvah to a Jew and still be usher to a non-Jew. What's the example Tosfos gives? Shmir Shabbos, right? It's a mitzvah for us to be Shomer Shabbos. So despite the fact that it's usher for a guy to be Shomer Shabbos, right? What would be another one? Talmud Torah, right? That category, those are things usher. Why don't we say Ni'ikam Nidi? We don't, because when it's a mitzvah, that's an exception to the rule. Then he brings up the Ubar case, and then Tosfos, here's where Rav Moshe really has an interesting original insight. If you go down to the bottom, Miu Kasha, Damrinan Beperek Ben Sora Morer, Yatza Rosho Ein Nogimbo, De Ein Dochin Nefesh Mipin Nefesh, Aval Kodem Shi Yatza Rosho, Hachaya Poshetis Yada, V'chatachto le'evarim u'motzio kedei lahatzio. What's that case about? We're about to look at that case in depth in the context of a Rambam. But over here, just for our purposes, the focus over there is the following. If there is a fetus who is getting in the way of the survival of the mother, right, then certainly what are we allowed to do? Just tear apart. I'm using that because that's the way it goes. Tear apart that fetus and save the mother. So Tosfos says, "Pan kasha." That presumably is usher to Ben Noach, because Ben Noach has to treat a fetus on the same status as a born person. So why isn't this breaking the rule of miyikamidi? Right? We are not. We are docha the nefesh of fetus. Right? Whereas the Ben Noach, it's usher to be docha the nefesh of the fetus. So Tosfos gives. Everyone understand the question? Right? So he answers, V'yishlomar dahanami b'Yisrael mitzvah kidei lahatzir. He says, it's true that normally we'd have this problem of if it's usher to a Ben Noach to kill the fetus, it should be usher to the Ben Yisrael. However, here, it's different because mitzvah kidei lahatzir. What does Tosfos mean by that? This is going to be the machlokis, opening machlokis, Rav Moshe and Rav Oldenburg. What does Tosfos mean in that line? Anyone want to give their own stab at it? See if you like Rav Moshe, if you like Rav Oldenburg? You guys can still be objective. I can't be. What do you think? What does it mean?
I mean, it could either be from the din of a rodef, or could maybe it could just be from the din of the fact that the lo is somewhat al damracha, you know?
Meaning what? That there's a mitzvah.
You can't let someone die when they're supposed to, when they're dying for you. Or the
good. However it's working, both your answers say that there's a mitzvah going on here.
Yeah.
And the reason this is not part of that klal of mi'ika midi de la ben noach aser and Yisrael shari is because it's one of those exceptions, like Shabbos, where there's a mitzvah here. Right? That's very different than saying what? What could you have said? Well, there might be some iser involved for a Jew to kill a fetus. whatever it is, Hashkata Zera Lebatala, Chabala, I don't know, there's some Isser. However, what's the din by Kol Isser Mishabat Torah? Pikuach Nefesh, Docha Kol Isser Batorah. So here's Pikuach Nefesh to the mother. There's some Isser involved in killing the baby. It's Nidcha Mishum Pikuach Nefesh. Those are very different answers. Rav Moshe chooses yours. And he says, the fact that Tosfos didn't choose mine proves that the Isser is not Hashkat Zera Levatala, it's not Chavala, it's Ritzicha. Because it's Ritzicha, you have to come on to this other avenue, that there's a mitzvah quality to the act here. That's what gets you out of the mi'ika midi. But if it was just Stam, some other Isser, or Banam, certainly, but even an Isser Deraisa, not of the level of Ritzicha, the answer would have simply been, Pekuach Nefesh is Docha. So if Moshe starts off his piece with this, he says, it's Borer, the Gamre, that Tosfos held, that there's an Isser Tzichol Deraisa for killing a fetus, based on that answer. And the Tzitz Eliezer says two things. He says, number one, three things. Number one, there's another answer in Tosfos. There's a second answer that totally wipes out that whole approach. You don't have to come on to any of that. Number two, there's the Tosfos in Nidah. And he says, more than that, he does not understand Rav Moshe's pshat. He thinks pshat is the way I say it. All Tosfos is saying is, Pikuach Nefesh Docha Yisur. That's all Tosfos is saying. So what Rav Moshe, when you read the tshuva of Rav Moshe, you get the feeling that he's got a home run here. But Tzitz Eliezer seems to dismiss it. So there, you know, not such a very sophisticated argument over pshat. Where it gets very interesting is the next page. And here's one I really want to draw out from you guys, your pshat. Okay? This is a very, very famous enigmatic Rambam that an incredible amount has been written about.
So can you explain again Rav Moshe's logic? How
he says like this. He says, normally we should say that if the Ben Noach, even when the mother's life is at risk, it's us for them to choose between the mother and the fetus, right? So normally we should say, there's nothing that's us for Ben Noach to do that's mutter for me to do. So therefore it should also be us for me to choose between a fetus and a mother. I shouldn't automatically choose the mother, as the Mishnah clearly says I do. How could that be? So he says that Tosfos tells you that the only reason you can is because you're performing a mitzvah. And it's the fact that you're performing a mitzvah, right, that gets you out of the cloud of mi, ika, midi, the asa to them, that's muta to us. As opposed to what Tosfos could have said, what Moshe said, if this were true, is, no, there is an isser for me to kill a fetus in the first place. It's an isser chavala, or it's some other low-level isser. It's not ritzicha. It's anything but ritzicha. It's only ritzicha that forces you into, I can't choose this life over that life. Right? Right? That's the Gemara in Sanhedrin. When the Gemara learns out, misvara, right? Why is Ritzicha an exception to the Yahav Vayavar? Everyone's familiar with the very famous Rashi, right? It's the Rashi Dibur Mitzvah Svar. What is it? Ayin Dalad? I think it's Ayin Bez? Ayin Gimel. Okay. So over there, right, Rashi tells you the whole thing is a Svara, that, you know, my blood's not redder than yours, the whole thing, right? And he goes into a whole equation. If either way someone's going to die, we might as well not have an Aveira done, right? Take a look at that Rashi. It's a very nice Rashi. The bottom line is, Tosfos chooses not to go the route of Docha and Nefesh because he considers this Ritzicha. And because this is Ritzicha to kill the fetus, I can't just say I have Dechiyas Sisurim. I'm forced into, you know, finding some other way out of the klal of Mi'ika Midi. So I'll just say there's a mitzvah involved. And the emphasis is on there's some mitzvah of saving the mother. Whatever the mitzvah is, right? It's the fact that it's a mitzvah Yisrael that allows me to do this. Not the normal thing we would have said, right? Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Yisur. Why not? He says, why not? Why isn't this Pikuach Nefesh Docha Yisur? If it's just a little tiny low-level Daraisa. Oh, it must be because it isn't a little tiny low-level Daraisa. It's really an Isir Etzicha. And Tzitz Eliezer just doesn't buy it. He doesn't buy the whole thing. Even though Tzitz Eliezer might have a little problems with the Lashon of Tosfos, it says mitzvah. He does do that. And it does seem to fit in with the klal that Tosfos starts out with. The opening klal by Shabbos, right? As an exception to the rule of Mi'ika Midi, is this klal of, unless it's a mitzvah? And it seems to fit right in with that. That's why Rav Moshe finds it very compelling. Tzitzel has several ways out, aside from not accepting the pshat of Rav Moshe. He also says there's the Tosfos in Nida, and there's the second Teretz that Tosfos gives you. Where it really comes to a head, their argument, is in the sugya on page 4. Ha'isha shehim, and we just, it's the same one that Tosfos quoted. This is a Mishnah in all of us. Ha'isha shehi mikasha leled, a woman who's having trouble giving birth, v'chatin is avlad b'meyeha, u'motzin also evarim evarim, mitnei shechayeha kod min l'chayev. That's the din we just said. Yatzarubo, right? Or another gear, so yatzarosho. Ein noginbo she'ein dofin nefesh mipnei nefesh. What's going on in this Mishnah? What's pshat in the Mishnah? Tell me why, number one, right? Why can't I, what is the difference between the two cases? When it comes to the fetus, I sacrifice the fetus to save the mother. When it comes to the freshly born baby, ein dochen nefesh mipnei nefesh. What's it all about?
The language of the Mishnah is relatively clear, right? In the first case, he's not born yet, it doesn't have a nefesh, but not defining the life, the child's nefesh. So we have a call, ein dochen nefesh mipnei nefesh. So the only reason it doesn't fit is because it's not a nefesh.
Good. But as opposed to the second case, he is a nefesh.
Right.
Where it tells you nefesh and nefesh. That's exactly what Rashi says. So if you look at the next piece, I won't read it for the sake of time, but actually it's G'day to focus on the setting of this Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara there says, Katan harodav nitan latzila benafsho, right? Chiddush that you could kill not only an adult rodef, but even a katan rodef. What's that based on? Kesev harodav ino tzerich hasra, loshna gadov, loshna katan. You don't need hasra to kill a rodef, and you can even kill a rodef who's a katan. Good. Comes along the Gemara and asks the following kasha. Wait a second. What about the Mishnah that we just read that says Yetzer Rosho ain't nogin bo lefish ain't dochin nefesh mi nefesh? Vamai rodef who? Isn't even in the second case the baby who's born already? Isn't that baby a rodef? Shouldn't we say kill that rodef, let the mother live? So the Gemara gives the answer that I think most of us would have come up with, right? No. Hasam demishmaya karadfila. That's not the rodef. When we think of a rodef, we think of a bad guy. Right? Here, it's mishamayim that this baby is going to cause the death of the mother. Therefore, what? That's the question. Therefore what? Therefore it's not a rodef? At all? So, according to Rashi, he explains it just the way he did, very, very neatly. The whole thing, yeah, he's not a rodef at all. And what's going on here is not an issue of rodef, b'chla. The maskar of the Gemara is, forget about rodef. It's nothing to do with this case. This case is about nefesh gemura and nefesh not gemura. And that's all it is. And that's the pashut pshat in the Mishnah that is certainly the way Rashi seems to learn it. The big shayla has come in with the Rambam. Take a look at this Rambam. Very, very famous Rambam. Perek Aleph, Halacha Tes. Rav Moshe seizes upon this Rambam, and this together with that Tosfos is the basis of his Shita. Why he's so machmir. Harei zu mitzvah losaseh shlo lachos al nefesh harodef. That's a very important opening. The Rambam tells you there is a mitzvah, clear mitzvah. Don't worry about a rodef. Kill. The next word, according to Rav Moshe, is critical. Lefichach. What does that mean? Therefore, I'm about to relate the halacha I'm going to tell you now to the halacha I just told you a moment ago. Lefichach, you can't play around with what Rav Moshe says. He gives you a whole little speech in his tshuva that everybody knows that when he says lefichach, the Rambam means to relate these two things. Horu chachamim sha'ubra shihi makshali led mutar lachto cha'ubra b'meyeha bein basam bein biyad. Why? Again. Mipnei shehu kerodef achareha lehorga v'im mishahotzi rosho ein noginbo she'ein doch nefesh mi'nefesh v'zehu tivo shel olam. Unbelievable Rambam. What on earth is he trying to say? Why is this such a difficult Rambam? There's two very significant kashas to this Rambam. Somebody tell me that. Blaring kasha. Especially if we understand it so nicely like Rashi, right? We understood the case of why am I allowed to kill that fetus and not the live born? Very simple. Not an nefesh. Yes, an nefesh. What does the Rambam throw in? What word? Rodef. It had to be a rodef. That's question number one. You can see already Rav Kiva Eger on the bottom over there. asked this kasha, what's the Rambam telling you then? The whole reason we're allowed to kill the fetus has nothing to do with Roy Davey thought. But not for the Rambam. The Rambam says it must be in there. You need the fetus to be eroded. Halacha l'maisa, significant ramification. At the end of the day, because Rav Moshe holds this to be so important, one ramification is, you know the only time that Rav Moshe will be matir abortion? It has to be mamish rodif. It has to be mamish bevadai. This comes up and could be incredible chumrah. Let's say the doctor says, I think it's likely that you're going to get into trouble, life-threatening danger, if we don't abort the baby. So, likely is not possibly enough for emotion. I mean, it depends how long. It has to be, the expression uses karo vivanta. It has to be like a rodent. And it also lends to the following question. Let's say it's not the fetus that is the sakana to the mother, other than in an indirect way. Meaning, pregnancy is a problem for her. Right? Because of some other disease she has, like the cancer lady. Right? Is the fetus the rodif in terms of the cancer? The cancer is the rodif. So perhaps there's room to even say that Rav Moshe would be machmir in such a case. Right? She can't do the chemo. Right? Because it's going to kill the baby, and the baby's not really a rodif. Possible. Right? Because Rav Moshe is very focused on the Rambam insisting on its rodif. He feels it fits in very beautifully with his shita that there's ritzicha going on. Why do we need a rodif? Rav Moshe says, simple. It's Yahavah, Yavor. This is ritzicha. And every ramification of ritzicha is what's going to come out of Rav Moshe's shita. So therefore, you can't be matir, the killing of that fetus, without mamish rodef bavada. Even if you're going to say all that, that's nice. What's the big shaila, number two? So, the fetus is a rodef. What about the baby who's already born? Is that baby a rodef? Any different?
It's already born, the head's up.
Yeah.
The head's up.
But right, the reason the mother's going to die is because she's stuck in labor. The head's out. But now it's a nefesh gemura. Is that baby any less a rodef or any more a rodef than the fetus? Answer, logically, would be no. Absolutely not. That is the second incredible puzzling part to this Rambam. If we're going to get into rodef, and we're going to say that you need rodef to matir killing the baby, then it should apply even after birth. Should be no difference whatsoever. Right? Everyone understand that? That's very important. The Chora, you should treat both cases identical. So this is what, you know, about 15 different Achronim asked this kasha on the Rambam.
In terms of Roger, we certainly focus on in that situation, the head is already out. We focus on the baby being order as opposed to the mother being ordered for the baby.
Ah, so that's the Yushalmi. I'm not going to get into this too much. Yushalmi puts it the way you're putting it, actually. That's a difference. Once the baby's born a little, that shaila becomes the shaila. Which one's really the rodef? Right? That's one answer to the question. That's a difference. When the baby's inside, clearly the baby was the rodef, and the Yerushalmi seems to imply, but once they come out, it's up for grabs who the rodef really is. Short of that, though, well, 4 o'clock, we have to end. We'll end with the following thought. And I'll give you some occurs if you want to look at it. These are fascinating answers. This is really about 10 answers to this question. One, why does the Rambam need Rodef? Right? Rav Moshe obviously is going to take one approach. Rav Oldenburg is going to take a completely different approach. Two, if the issue is Rodef, what's the difference between the Rodef in the case of a fetus versus the Rodef in when the baby is already born a little? The answer to those two questions, right, who you choose to put forward as your answer, I'll give you a hint. Rav Moshe takes Rav Chaim. Right? Rav Chaim has an answer to this Rambam, and Rav Moshe loves it. Rav Moshe also had his own original answer, but Rav Chaim represents the classic answer. I'll tell it to you very quickly. Rav Chaim says like this. When it comes to the din of Rodef, there's two halachos going on. Right? Not unusual for Rav Chaim to say this, two dinim, right? He says there's a din in the chiyuv of the Rodef, and what's the other side? Hatzala sanirda, right? When it comes to the idea that if this is just tivol shel olam or mishamayim karat fila, right, which the Rambam quotes and the Gemara quotes, which seems to, before we understood that, to knock out the idea of rodef. There's no rodef going on. This is just the way it is, right? It's the way of nature. You know, it's a tivol shel olam. So Reb Chaim says that's enough to knock out What? Of those two dinim, which one do you think would get knocked out by that? The chiyuv on the rodif, right? This is, he's not a kavana trying to kill anyone. So, tivo shel olam is enough to knock out just that side of the din rodif. What's left? The din hatzola nirda. So, Chaim says, hatzola nirda is good enough for a nefesh of an ubar, but not good enough for a nefesh gemura. That's the total answer to the shayla. But you need the din of rodef for the permission to kill the fetus. So Rav Moshe says, you see, absolutely there's an issue of betzicha going on. Without some element of the din rodef, it would be absolutely asur midaraisa, even at the life-threatening outcome of the mother, to do anything to this fetus. So Rav Moshe will sit with the Reb Chaim. If you want me to go over with you, I'll do it some other time if you didn't catch it. But that's Rav Moshe Shita, that the Rambam absolutely requires Rodef. That's proof that this is an Isser Tzicha. Rav Waldenberg says, not so fast. And he counters it by choosing three other approaches to this Shaila in the Rambam. I'm obviously not going to do them now. I'll just tell you who says them. The Achiezer, Chaim Ozer, is one approach he uses. The Tiferes Tzvi, which is an incredible approach that he uses. And the third one is the one that Rabbi Kiva Eger mentions, the Geonei Basra. He uses those three approaches. So very quickly, next week, I'll review those and we'll see how Rabbi Waldenberg gets out of this entire issue and goes all the way to the other extreme to show the expression here is not that there's a din ritzifa. It's an incredible thing he does, but it's that it's just, it's not even asami deraisa, it's just a din rabbanan. So we'll stop here and we'll take it.